Hello and welcome to episode 81 of season 2 of the Search with Kanda podcast. I am your host, Jack Chambers Ward, and joining me this week is a freelance digital PR consultant and specialist, Joe O'Reilly. Joe and I are going to be talking about why so many people think link building is so difficult these days. And of course, Joe will be giving us hints, tips, and some advice because she is incredibly knowledgeable about all things digital PR. Before we get to my chat with Joe, I'd like to say a huge thanks to Systrix, who have sponsored Search with Kanda all throughout 2023. Thank you for your support, Systrix. If you'd like to go and check out Systrix and all of their fantastic tools and services, go to systrix.com/SWC. That stands for Search with Kanda. There you can check out some of their fantastic free tools and also have a free trial of their paid service as well. So like I said, go to systrix.com/SWC. There'll be a link for that in the show notes. And you can go and check out their free tools and free trial as well. We have some of the latest data updates here from Systrix as well. Going to spend a couple of minutes talking about supermarket visibility in the UK in July 2023. This is provided by the data journalism team over at Systrix. And in particular, this article is done by the one and only Steve Payne, who you may recognize from his Brighton SEO talks and his previous appearance on this show as well. So let's talk about some of the UK supermarkets. I know quite a few of our listeners are not based in the UK, so some of these names might not make much sense to you, but basically supermarkets for us are big stores that cover everything from foods to clothing to household items. Some of them even branch out into like finance and banking and even funeral services sometimes. They are really kind of surprisingly diverse, basically. You think of them as just one big shop, but you go and do your food shopping and your family shopping and all that kind of stuff. So if you are familiar with UK supermarkets, if you are living in the UK or are from the UK, you're probably familiar with these names: Tesco, Marks and Spencer, Asda, and Sainsbury's. I would argue like Morrison's is also in there as well. People know of like Waitrose and things, but those are the big four, arguably. And Tesco have been doing a particularly interesting job, especially with their Tesco recipe stuff. So their real food subdomain, realfood.tesco.com, has done some pretty significant growth over the last 12 months, up by 33%, which I think is pretty impressive. They're going up against kind of fellow UK-based things like BBC Good Food and that kind of thing. And BBC Good Food is much, much bigger. But Tesco have seen a pretty significant growth, in particular in those sectors. Marks and Spencer has seen a 35% overall increase in visibility. And of course, if you know anything about Marks and Spencer, you know all about their birthday cake and the Colin the Caterpillar controversy. There's some alliteration for you. It's very interesting to see how much of that kind of fake competition, I want to say, the little snipes back and forth between different companies and different supermarkets actually help to drive up search intent of people trying to understand what is going on and actually helping them rank really, really well for things like birthday cake, which is not something I would instantly think of M&S being the kind of driving factor behind their site, but apparently it is. In that range, they're competing with a lot of other specific sort of bakery shops like thecakestore.co.uk and patisserievalerie.co.uk. It's interesting to see that M&S have done so much growth there over the last 12 months. Also, we are seeing a lot of growth through Ocado. I don't know if you... There's an Ocado just for you. It's the... And again, I'm sure if you're living in the UK, if you've been in the UK over the last few years, you've probably heard the jingle either on a podcast or a YouTube video or on TV. There's an Ocado just for you. And that drives me up the wall because I hate that jingle. It's very, very catchy and will go around in my head all day long. So you're welcome on your Monday, if you're listening to this on Monday, just having that little jingle going around in your head. There's an Ocado just for you. But they are actually doing some interesting stuff as well, because Ocado used to be essentially like a delivery service for Waitrose, which is another very sort of high-end supermarket here in the UK. But M&S have started to really focus on Ocado and push it. And kind of, like I said, a few years ago, essentially Ocado was on the decline. And now it's on the up as Marks and Spencer seem to is starting to invest more and kind of really competing with Waitrose in that space. And another interesting stat here is that if you zoom out and take a look at the big picture of the entire sector, all the supermarkets and all their visibility put together, is actually a fair amount of stability. So what we're seeing from the growth of certain sites and the decline of other sites seems to be kind of balancing out, give or take, over the last 12 months or so. So yeah, very interesting stuff. Like I said, I'm just scratching the surface and kind of banging through a bunch of headings and top lines here. Please do go and check out the Systrix blog. Go to systrix.com/blog. And like I said, I'll put a link for that in the show notes. You can go and read all about the changes over the last 12 months in the UK supermarket sector. Of course, please do go to systrix.com/SWC. Get that free trial, get those free tools. And a huge thank you once again to Systrix for sponsoring the show. My guest for this week, you may recognize her from the recent Search Barcelona appearance and an appearance on the Women in Tech SEO podcast. She is a freelance digital PR specialist, the one and only Jo O'Reilly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jack. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Really excited to have a chat today. Yeah, it's great to be here.
I feel like you and I have crossed paths many times across various different Slacks and social medias and lots of virtual stuff. It's nice to actually sit down and properly have a conversation. I know it's for a podcast, but I feel like it is still kind of an actual conversation as well, right?
Feels like a proper meeting as opposed to just kind of being in the same threads and the same...
Exactly. So, as I kind of introed you there, you are a digital PR specialist, something I am very much not. I am very much a SEO person and not a digital PR person, and that is kind of the topic you brought to the table for us to talk about, right? Because there was a thread on Twitter that happened a little while ago, and I love the way you kind of waded in and says, like, well, there is a reason that every time anybody asks the question of, like, what's the hardest part in SEO, and you see that question on LinkedIn and Twitter and that all the time, basically, it's almost always link building, right? I think people think of link building as this very difficult, very unique thing that is almost like sometimes ethereal, sometimes impossible, sometimes unachievable. And I guess we kind of want to have a discussion about that. Me picking your brains as the person who has lived and breathed digital PR for so long and done and built so many links over the years. And me, who I think I've built like six, maybe 10 ever.
That's good. That's good. That's a great start, right?
It's better than nothing, right?
But definitely. And I think that's it. I think that's part of this conversation is that, you know, there are things that you can do that I couldn't do. You know, there are more, you know, there are words that you guys use in tech SEO that to me are ethereal. They're like incantations, like heslangs and, you know, meta descriptions and things that sort of, you know, in digital PR, we look at it and it's just, oh, the alchemy, the tech SEO alchemy is happening again. And that's fine. That's okay. We're not all meant to know the same things and do the same things in the industry. It'd be boring if we did. But it's also just completely different skill sets. And like you said, I think it popped up again. I think it was Freddie, an SEO, does loads of great stuff for SEO. He did did an SEO summer course over the summer, and he's putting together another SEO course essentially, and he was trying to really kind of find out what are the bits of SEO that people struggle with. And whenever, as you said, whenever I see these polls, and it's a really popular poll, link building is far and wide the thing people are like, well, I don't understand it, I don't know how to do it, I can't make it work.
To put it into perspective for the folks who haven't seen that, I'll put a screenshot of the poll and the link to the Twitter thread in the show notes, so do go and check them out. But just in case you hadn't got the stats here, 17.4% said technical SEO, fair enough. 2.3% said on page, 7% said content, and you think, well, those numbers don't add up very much. Yeah, because 73.3% said link building. It's more than the rest of them put together times like three. Almost three quarters of everyone just said link building. It's like a pretty standout stat, right? It's not just a little bit, it is very clearly the one.
And this is always the case whenever I see this, however it's done, whenever it's done, it is always the case. And it's the thing that if you talk to people in the industry, you know, on different Slack groups for freelancers, the Women in Tech SEO chat as well, I spend a lot of time there. Link building is the thing that really, you know, people feel pressured to perform that service or that role as part of their SEO role, but it's a completely different skill set. And I think that's kind of, I think that poll caught me on a bad day and I was like, right, I've had enough of this. I'm just going to explain why this is. Because I think what made me quite sad about it is this idea that there are all these really talented tech SEOs or really talented content SEOs that, you know, they are smashing all these different aspects of their job, all these different, you know, components of what it takes to be in the industry and to do a good job for clients, for whether they're agency or in-house. And then that feeling that, well, actually, I'm not that good because I can't do this one part of the role. And to me, well, should it be part of their role?
Yeah, this was something I experienced in my previous agency where it was just like, everybody is a digital marketing person. Like, you cover paid ads, you cover paid social, you cover link building, you cover SEO, technical SEO, content, absolutely everything in one big lump sum. And I'm like, I don't do paid stuff. I've never done PPC in my life. Why am I suddenly doing this client's like social ads? And I didn't get a choice about it. And it was really refreshing coming to Canada, not to, you know, I know this podcast is done by Canada, but I'm not being biased. It's one of the reasons I came to work here in the first place, is that my job title was SEO specialist. And I wasn't expected to, as you were saying there, expected to suddenly meet all these extra KPIs for stuff I'd not trained in and don't know how to do. Oh, Jack, you've got to go and build 30 links this week. I'll be like, oh God, what do I do? And same, spinning it around to you, Joe, it'd be like, oh yeah, you've got to go and, you know, fix all these hreflangs and implement all this stuff and do all this developer work and technical SEO stuff. Like, that's not how people's skill sets work. Like, some people, granted, some people are across the board and are able to do it, but they're kind of like unicorns in the industry, right? That's a pretty special person who can kind of really cover. And I consider myself a bit of a generalist. Like, I'm not particularly technical, not particularly content led, not particularly anything, but each of these things is a whole skill set in and of itself. And I think you're totally right, having that approach where we often expect so much, maybe not even of like from our managers and our bosses, but even of ourselves, right? You're setting those unrealistic expectations of ourselves as well. I think that's a huge part of growing in your career and hopefully learning and stuff like that, fingers crossed.
I mean, yeah, I think that's why this sort of stood out to me, because I think there's a bit of a trope in social media, for example, where you get, you know, young people come into the digital marketing industry, they often start in social media doing, like you said, doing the odd paid ad here and there. And I think these days, when you see the work that someone who is a social media manager has to do, where you know, I mean, we're just talking before the podcast about threads and how we're all having to now tack that onto our own personal social media kind of strategy. You know, if you're doing Twitter and threads and LinkedIn, and then suddenly you're expected to go and record videos for TikTok or YouTube, these are different skill sets. These are, and they're valuable skill sets, but they're different skill sets. And expecting people to not just have that breadth of skill set, but also to be able to do 15 different opposing things at once and do them well, sets people up to fail. And it's not a nice thing. And I think this is kind of what really stood out to me about kind of seeing these polls again and again, was, are we just expecting people who are really good at a set type of work to understand the nuance of something like digital PR? Digital PR isn't the link building of old. It isn't the outreach of old. It requires a lot of understanding of a media industry that's forever changing and quite intense to keep on top of. I don't know how you would even keep on top of what was going on in the media and how that was working, as well as keeping on top of your algorithm updates and your, you know, all the things that you've got going on these days, just in tech SEO, where things are changing so quickly. We've only got so many hours in the day, right? We've only got so much time that we can spend not doing our job, but just keeping up with the industry, that just to do those two things alone, you know, you'd be working 24 hours a day to do that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we are launching to my first question. You led me very nicely. Nice little segue there. I appreciate that. It's what you like to see in a podcast guest is, how much do you think link building has changed over the last, say, 2-3, and then going back even further, 5-10 years? You kind of hinted it there, right? It is not what it was a few years ago. But from your perspective, coming in as a former journalist and having that experience as well, and now obviously working in agency and going freelance, like, how much has it changed for you and your experience and the entire kind of like outreach digital PR space over the last few years?
Oh, it's changed massively. I think the obvious thing, and I think everyone's getting sick of hearing how, you know, the new normal and how the pandemic changed the world of work. You know, there's no getting away from it, really, is there? I think when I came into digital PR, before, you know, obviously before the pandemic, and we were doing these big hero campaigns and these big data studies, and I was already going down a more reactive route. It's what I'm best at. It's what I enjoy. I think it's the best way to do digital PR, particularly for small e-commerce sites or smaller companies that don't have a Barbie level marketing budget. Reactive PR is one of the smartest things you can do with your marketing budget if you don't have all that resource and all that budget to play with. But you know, the pandemic really kind of did move things away from these big hero campaigns, because the news cycle suddenly changed in a way that in my lifetime I don't think we'd seen. I don't think the news cycle had that kind of a dramatic change, probably since sort of like the Second World War, where suddenly everything was always going to be related to this one topic. Everything from lifestyle to news to finance to health, every sector of journalism was changing and filtered through this lens of, well, we're going through this crazy thing in the world. You know, I was working in tech at the time, and you know, and not to be ghoulish about it, because it was horrendous for so many people, obviously, you know, not just the actual impact of the pandemic itself, but the mental health aspect of lockdowns. But it changed the world of work. So working in tech, it suddenly gave us all these new things to talk about. Mm. We were talking about Zoom suddenly, you know, the shares for Zoom peaked. We all suddenly had to be doing things remotely. You know, I was working for a VPN affiliate site in-house doing digital PR at the time. So you can imagine suddenly, you know, all these companies needed to be talking about VPNs because their staff were working from home. And it changed, and reactive PR just kind of got really embedded in how we approach it. And that's not really, we've not really shaken that off. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good way to do PR. But, you know, I think it's a skill. And a lot of that skill is having the understanding of how the news works, and how trends work, and how, you know, news isn't really always different. We have this idea as kind of casual news consumers that, you know, there's not a calendar for it. There really is. You know, a lot of news works on a kind of calendar basis, a bit like your social media content calendars, effectively. And understanding that is a skill in itself, and having the time to keep up with that and stay on top of that is a real, you know, it's labor intensive in terms of the time it takes. And I wouldn't expect anyone to be able to tack that onto a tech role in SEO or even a content role in SEO.
Yeah, I think a lot of, especially with content, you see a lot of crossover with the kind of like trying to build natural links kind of approach, right? Where if you, in the words of Google, just make good content, and they make it sound so, so simple and so obvious. And yeah, we'll just naturally build you links and everything's fine and rainbows and kittens will come and celebrate with you and all this kind of stuff. That is not how that works. And I think you're totally right. Having an active approach to it and being switched on and aware of the processes, like I mentioned your background in journalism there as well. I have a little bit of that myself way back in the day doing like pop culture kind of stuff and coverage many, many years ago. And thinking about what actually goes into somebody writing an article and how writers are pitching to editors or the editorial process of a particular publication or whatever it is. It's not just about having that contact, but it's understanding their cycle, like you were saying. Oh, this kind of company always covers this kind of thing at this time of year, so now is a good time to pitch it. Being aware of that kind of stuff, keeping track of that stuff, and being aware of trends and all that kind of stuff is so time-consuming. I'm conscious I do this in SEO now because of the podcast, because I need to be talking about things that are relevant and topical and things like that, especially when Mark and I do our monthly like news recap episodes, essentially. It's a whole like effort and conscious effort of me to go through and check social media, check newsletters, check different websites and publications and all this kind of stuff. And you're totally right. Expecting somebody to do that on top of another full-time job as well, and then also action all of that stuff and make sure you're trying to get results from all that thing, is just a whole other ballgame, right? That is a whole other thing. So I guess my question is, like, do you think it's actually harder now to build links in a general kind of sense, or is it a little bit easier because of how technology has changed?
No, I think it's harder. Not to be a pessimist about it. I love what I do. It's great fun. But yeah, it's harder. There are more digital PRs now. You know, every week it seems like there are more digital PRs and less journalists, right? We're all going after the same crumbs of you know, we're all chasing the same journalists. We're filling up the same inboxes. We're chasing the same trends. I mean, I can't imagine if you worked in lifestyle or you know, any kind of lifestyle journalism at the moment, how many Barbie press releases you've had this week,
oh,
right?
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely.
Like, you would just be sick of it. I mean, you've got the stuff that the actual marketing teams involved in the film are doing themselves. And I think I've seen, was it Burger King have released a Barbie burger with Peter in... Yeah, you would just, like, we're chasing the same story. We're trying to, whether it's newsjacking or reactive PR outreaches, we're all chasing the same trends. And it's always about being first, which in itself is incredibly difficult to do. You can't do that alongside another role, really. You've got to be ready to go, right, I'm dropping everything so I can jump on this story, newsjack it within the hour. And trying to find different angles constantly to get your client, get your website in that press and attract that journalist attention. You know, that's not something, you know, I would expect any, particularly sort of more junior members of staff to be able to tack on to a role that's already quite involved and already requires a lot of different skills and time and resource.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of that, again, that kind of newsjacking thing. Being able to turn stuff around quickly can be the difference between getting a link and not getting a link, right? If you, like you said, if you're first in there, there is a pretty good chance that something's going to happen. And that can be a matter of hours. It can be a matter of minutes sometimes, literally. Oh, sorry, somebody else emailed me 2 minutes before you did. Tough shit, you're not getting that link kind of thing.
Yeah, there's no loyalty. And this is a thing people often ask me about relationships with journalists. And it's not like the old days. I don't get to go out to nice long boozy lunches with journalists.
I've heard about these things. I read about one where everybody went on like a retreat to some nice hotel and they all had like Sunday roasts and stuff. I'm like, what? Where is this? And like, apparently, like you said, yeah, it's not really much of a thing anymore.
You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, we used to get PRs send nice gifts to the newsroom and stuff like that, but no one ever took me on a nice long boozy lunch. I didn't have time. I was writing 6-7 stories a day by the time I left journalism. You know, again, the pandemic changed how journalism worked. People aren't in newsrooms 5 days a week now. Most of them are working from home. There's a hybrid yep. work model, a bit like most agencies, most digital marketing roles. So, you know, people aren't going to wait for you because they like you. You know, if you're not first when the story breaks to get your comment in, to get your data in, they're not going to think, oh, you know, I'm going to wait around and see if, you know, some, you know, that PR that I like, get, they're busy and they've got KPIs, right? They've got targets to hit as well. So yeah, speed is of the essence. If you're in an agency, and you know, I've dealt with this myself, you know, dealing with sign-off processes can absolutely derail the best intentions in PR. So yeah, speed and yeah, it again, you know, a really hard thing to kind of juggle that as an add-on or a bolt-on to an SEO role that's more traditional content or tech-based SEO.
Yeah, I think Google have really been leaning towards I can't remember the exact wording they use, but trying to give credit to the first resource, the first source of information, and making sure they're obviously as a big wider part of their battle against misinformation and fake news. Speaking of the pandemic, that was a big kick in the teeth for them happening. That was kind of we need to actually do something about this because people are taking weird medications or horse tranquilizers or deworming tablets or whatever it was. And I don't often say this, but credit to Google in their kind of active pursuit of trying to give credit where credit is due, for want of a better phrase, of the first person to cover this piece of information should be, for want of a better phrase, ranking higher, should be featured in SERPs and featured in, you know, the new SERP features. We've been talking about perspectives a lot recently on the show. We've been talking a lot about the search generative experience, or the kind of like AI generated SERP features we've been talking about recently. There seems to be a conscious effort from Google to make sure that they are highlighting the original source for that kind of stuff. And we're even talking about sort of like syndicated content a little while ago, and what are the benefits of that kind of thing. So I guess thinking about, like, yeah, that quick turnaround being so key for then, you know, once you get a good placement in a particular publication, there's then chances to get that kind of chain reaction and that cascade, right, of like, oh, this other person saw this larger publication cover it, so they're going to cover it in a local equivalent or a partner site or whatever, right? And there's that can be the difference between an entire successful link campaign and absolutely no links whatsoever.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the syndication thing's fascinating, and there is a lot of debate in the digital PR and SEO community about the value of syndicated links. Like you said, Google's kind of looking into what it's doing now with syndication, and that could change the game. So I'm keeping quite a close eye on that at the moment, because that could be a real, yeah, that could really change how we approach it and what we're trying to achieve. But yeah, the main thing is that, you know, you're not going to get there in the first place if you're not quick. And even when we're not talking newsjacking, you know, we're talking sort of about trends and stuff, you've still got to be quick, because there are only so many ideas. Like we're all kind of trying to come up with the same ideas and the same ways to create stories around things. And, you know, I can't, you know, and every digital PR will have had this experience, and it is absolutely gutting when you come up with what you think is a brilliant idea. You know, you're in the shower or you're doing your morning walk and you have this brilliant idea and you're like, right, this is going to work for this client. It's really topical. People are talking about it. And then you get in, you log on and you look, and someone did it last week and they built all the links of it. You can't do it now. You can't, you know. So there is a you know, an economy of ideas, and there's only so many of them, you know, as well. So, and again, trying to do that and balance that with different parts of, you know, other SEO roles, really difficult. It's a big ask, and I'm not sure we're doing. And I think what you said earlier that I really liked is this idea that it's not even necessarily that our bosses are putting pressure on us. It's, are we putting too much pressure on ourselves to be able to do everything? I know that if I judge myself by my tech SEO ability, well, I'd leave the industry because I don't know enough. I don't know anything, right? Like, my experience of SEO, I mean, I started doing SEO as a journalist when we started having to put our own meta descriptions into news stories on CMSs and things, and hated it.
That's SEO, that counts, anything. Mate. That I know.
absolutely hated it. It was a waste of time. Didn't know what SEO was. So I was just trying to write my really engaging news stories for the reader, which, you know, is what Google tells us they want to keep doing anyway. You know, we're writing for the reader. But yeah, I just hate this idea that there are particularly young, particularly kind of new in the industry SEOs out there judging themselves by their ability to go out there and build links, particularly with digital PR. It's really hard. I've been doing it for years. I have the privilege of having a media background, which has given me a great launch pad into digital PR, because I had that insight. You know, if I was coming at it from a tech background and being expected to do it as kind of a, you know, like a bolt-on or as an extra part of my job, I would be massively disadvantaged by that, and yeah, be really up. And I know what I'm like. I probably would judge myself for it if it was the thing that everyone else was saying they could do it and they were doing it. I'd be like, well, why can't I do this? I think it's something, yeah, perhaps we should all be talking about more, but it is a real distinct skill set. You need very, you know, different skills in a lot of cases to tech skills or to content on page content skills. And I think a bit more clarity around that in the industry could be really important.
Yeah. So what would you say are those kind of key skills that you need to say if somebody is listening to this right now and they're thinking like, yeah, I'm working in a, as I did, as I said previously, my previous agency, like working in a broader digital marketing thing, and they've done a little bit of link building and think, oh, actually, I quite enjoy this. Maybe I should go off and specialize into this. What are the kind of skills they should be focusing on? And then I guess the follow-up question to that is, where are the resources to kind of learn this kind of stuff, I guess?
Okay, so I mean, I know, this is what I say, you know, when I do training with people, I do training courses sometimes with in-house teams, and NewSense can be taught, right? It is, everyone always thinks it's like a ethereal kind of skill to know what
like a right spidey at sense kind of thing.
Yeah, like a spidey sense. And it is a little bit, and I do have a bit of that, and you know, lots of other hangovers from my days as a journalist. I sometimes still think in tabloid headlines, which is, you know, things happen and instantly I'm thinking of what the headline would be. But honestly, it's just about consuming content. You know, if you know where, you know, if you've got a client that's got a list of target publications, the only way you're going to be successful getting in those target publications is by reading their content, looking for what it is they want from, you know, from an expert, from a thought leader? Do they want commentary? Do they want data? You know, do they publish stories? There's a lot of talk about the difference, I think, between how it's done in America versus how it's done in the UK. And you look at a lot of the successful campaigns you've seen done in America, it's really about pitting states against each other. You know, what is the best state for the worst?
So I see that all the time. They're obsessed
with that
campaign.
They love it. Very competitive.
Most search for blank in the states, and then it's all 50 states. And then each one is labeled with the word or the phrase or the color or whatever it is. Like, absolutely obsessed with that kind of stuff.
It seems to do really well. And it's quite a different approach to how I would do things perhaps in the UK. Although, again, you know, we've got Reach PLC with all their regional titles, so it does work. Having that regional angle means you're not just chasing the national press all the time. You can go after, you know, I think up here, you know, in the Northwest, I think the big ones, obviously the Manchester Evening News and the Liverpool Echo, and they've got their own quite big distribution networks from getting links and coverage there. So regional angles, understanding what the press are looking for by just reading it, really, consuming content. You know, another thing that, and there's no shame in doing this, go and look at what other people are doing. There's a really good newsletter called The Grapevine.
You beat me to it. I was going to mention Ione's newsletter. Yeah, yeah.
She's doing a great service to the industry with that, I think. You go see anyone from Digital PR on a podcast talking about like where you can learn stuff, they'll mention that. I think there's a few, you know, newsletters, just kind of really looking at, you know, what the competitors are doing. How are they building links? What kind of campaigns are they doing? And then trying to like think, well, actually, how can I do something similar or something slightly different or bigger or smaller? Or, you know, definitely just, yeah, by consuming as much content as possible, which is great fun. It can be exhausting, right? You need to have boundaries of it.
I've heard that a lot, similar to like professional writers. I used to work in the comic book industry, and friends of mine going and being full-time writers being like, in order to write, you need to read. And I think that is the perfect kind of like distillation of that skill set. Like, you don't know what you're doing unless you know what other people have done in the past. And as much as you obviously can take credit for your own stuff, so much of us, we are standing on the shoulders of the giants that have come before us and all that kind of thing. And understanding what's working now and what has worked in the past can get you an idea of, like you said, what may work in the future. You can get ahead of that trend, right? You can see that, oh, I think a lot of people seem to be interested in this thing. And that was 10 years ago. And the thing after that was subject B. So maybe next year, subject B will be a big thing and you get ahead of that curve. Understanding historical trends and data and reading what's out there, what kind of things publications cover. I don't know how many times I've heard the stories of people like, oh, I pitched to this publication and they didn't pick up on anything. And I'm like, have they ever written about that thing before? Did you like do a site operator search and check like, oh yeah, this person has talked about the Barbie movie before. Do they have anything to do with Barbie on their thing at all? Like, why are you pitching a Barbie movie story to them then? Like, understanding that. So it's little simple things like that that can really make a big difference, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a thing that you see when journalists get wound up and share snippets of press releases and drag us all on Twitter. It's where you've got, I don't know, someone that works in, you know, covered hard news and politics, and they've been sent a listicle about the Barbie movie or the, you know, the influencer kind of Instagram earnings of the latest Love Island star. And they'll be like, but I cover tech and health, or I cover, why are you sending this? You know, and that's something that, again, we, you know, moving from the old days of outreach to the more kind of digital PR approach that I is sometimes lost in translation a bit. You can't just bam, thousands. Well, you can, but you know, you look like an idiot and you will be shamed on Twitter and it's really awkward and no one wants that, right? Like, you know, you can't just spam thousands of journalists. Journalists, and I was one myself, they're not famed always for being the nicest of people. They have a sharp tongue sometimes and they're busy. And if you keep winding them up, you know, at some point they are going to bite back. So try not to do that. Try and be quiet. You know, quite detailed about how you look into a journalist, what they write about, what their beat is, what they cover. But again, talking about this, that takes time to do that. It takes time to start understanding the different roles within media and the different beats that journalists cover and where your story or your client can fit into that. You can't just send a quote from your, you know, tech business client to a load of lifestyle journalists that write about sex or relationships, or, you know, they're not interested. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that was a huge thing. I helped out with a digital PR campaign at Canada for one of our clients the other week. And we were, because I'm a big nerd, and you can tell behind me, Joe, as a huge, like, there's a dragon and bits and pieces going on. There's a Wonder Woman poster up here. Like, I'm a big nerd.
Yeah.
I'm a big nerd. And we were doing this kind of thing that's focused around how trends in board gaming have shifted post-pandemic. More people are going out and being more social, essentially. So more people are going to things like board game cafes and things like that. And what's the kind of, like, statistics behind that? Fewer people also are, like, subscribing to Netflix and all that kind of stuff. So is there any correlation there and understanding that? And the thing I was able to do was kind of reach out to owners of board game cafes and have conversations with them. And so, like, have you experienced this? Or do you think there has been a post-pandemic shift in your footfall in your cafe or in your shop or whatever it was? And then they also got links from those publications of, like, blah, 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 from this board game cafe said this thing. And not only did our client get links, but the people who we had quoted also got links. And that was how we're kind of, like, trying to get them on board of, like, we would really appreciate your input, we will try and also get you links as well. And you're kind of, like, you know, helping everyone kind of do that thing at the same time, and not just, you know, asking people for favors the whole time. It's all about that back and forth, like you said, the relationship with the journalists as well. It can also be the relationship with the subject expert or whatever, or the person at the client who you need to get on the phone right now because I need to do this thing in the next 10 minutes, and who is the person I need to speak to? And it's not the usual marketing contact person you have through your agency contact or your freelance contact or whatever it is. But yeah, having those relationships, having those ready to go, knowing that you can slide into someone's DMs or pick up the phone or whatever it is a skill in and of itself as well. And having the, for a better phrase, not to gender the whole thing, to have the balls, to have the courage, the bravery to kind of just be like, I'm going to shoot my shot, see what happens, fingers crossed kind of thing.
Yeah, you have to be tenacious, right? It's a real, you know, and you have to be quite forward facing, and it's quite hard. And you know, talking a minute ago about, you know, journalists, you know, kind of dragging you on Twitter, you have to have a really thick skin to be a digital PR, you know, like most, you know, I'm going to send out a load of emails and they're either going to get ignored, I'm going to get an email back telling me to fuck off. That happens occasionally. It doesn't matter how well you target things, how great your media list is, you're always occasionally going to catch a journalist on a bad day and be told where to shove your listicle about, you know, whatever trending things happening on TikTok. That will happen to you, and you need to really be able to bounce back from that and understand that it's not personal. It's a, you know, it's just the way the industry works sometimes. And you know, I love that what you're saying though about the board game shops, and you know, that's something I try and do. And again, because it's what journalists tend to want, they want case studies. And one of the things that we could sometimes offer journalists to kind of leverage that link is the fact that we have a bit more time and resource often than the journalists themselves these days. You know, by the time I left journalism, I think I said I was writing 7 stories a day, and you know, having to, you know, not just that, we had to get them up on the site, you know, get them uploaded ourselves, find the image, do the, you know, do the
get your meta descriptions, yeah.
Yeah, get my meta descriptions done. And I didn't know what I was doing. That was all, you know, and often sort the post for the social out as well for the stories, you know, and get that over to the social team. Journalists are busy. If you've got the time to go and speak to the you know, the subject matter experts and compile those quotes alongside the quote from your client or the data from your client, yeah, you know, and you can help out small businesses as well. You can help out other people, but that is how you leverage that. You know, that is how you offer something that journalist can no longer perhaps go and get themselves. And, you know, again, you're doing them a favor. They're doing you a favor. It's earned media. We're all earning it by helping each other out.
Yeah, I think that the phrase earned media, I'm so glad you said that, because that is such a common phrase. I think we see coming back to the original kind of talking point of this whole discussion is why people feel it is so difficult is because you've got to earn it. You do not for want a better phrase, paid social stuff and paid search can be pretty easy. You can pretty much like pay to win and chuck a bunch of money at a particular set of keywords and at least be in the conversation there, right? But with so much digital PR stuff, the topics and the examples we've given so far, so many of them could just fall completely flat and you get absolutely no responses, no links, no whatever, and tough. Like there's nothing yeah. else. You can't like, oh, maybe like bribe a journalist or something, but don't do that. We officially don't endorse that on Search with Candor. But like, yeah, that phrase of earning it, I think is so key to this whole conversation, right? There is a, you've got to do something, either you've got to be first or you've got to be new. And like with the example I was just talking about, the campaign we did, it was like, we looked at statistics for like lots of different options. And like I said, like Netflix subscribers and cinema tickets and all this kind of stuff. And all of it was like public information. We're like, okay, cool. You can only go so far with that because anyone can get that from like the ONS or like a Statistica or whatever it is. Like, yeah, cool. How do we get a unique perspective on this? How do you get that twist that actually is, like you said, a case study of, okay, these are people who know what they're talking about and this is what they think about this trend, this industry, whatever it is. And I think that if you can't be first, have something new and unique and have people of authority sharing their experiences. Like I've reached out personally to like half a dozen board game cafes, some local here in Norwich, some further away, some I've visited in other cities and stuff like that. And that was a conscious decision to be like, contact everybody you've ever spoken to at a board game cafe and see what happens kind of thing, and try and get them. And you might get some responses, you might not, but yeah, it's all about that, putting that effort in and putting the time in, right? And I think earning that is such a powerful phrase that I think a lot of people kind of underestimate when it comes to building links and digital PR.
Absolutely. I mean, and everything you just said is great, but it's graft, right? It's hard graft. I think sometimes, you know, you do get that thing where sometimes people in the SEO space that don't build links or don't do digital PR can kind of look at you and think you press a little button and send a little email and magic up these links. And it's like, they haven't seen the preamble to that and the graft that's gone into that, the looking for the angles, the reaching out to subject matter experts, you know, I did a campaign a couple of years ago around Married at First Sight, and about the places where people in Married First Sight got married. I had to effectively be a bit of a journalist again and be phoning these wedding venues up as if I was a bride to be and getting the quote from them and getting the information about the wedding venue and, you know. Brilliant. And it was great and it worked because journalists couldn't go and do that themselves. They didn't have time, particularly for, you know, what was to them quite a kind of, you know, a throwaway piece of content about a show that was going to be on for a week and going to be popular for a week. They couldn't dedicate that time, but I could because I wanted to be in these publications. I knew what they needed. I knew how to get it. It was graft. I had to go and I think I was screenshotting with my phone the pictures of the wedding venues on the first night the show aired and then doing a Google reverse image search.
Oh my, that is grafted, mate.
Then track them down, then phone them, then the same with the caterers and trying to zoom into the caterer's badge in the show. And it's silly and it's fun and it worked, but it's not, you know, everyone just saw the end result. The agency, the client sees the end results and the links rolling in and they're really happy, but they've got no idea that you're stuck there at, you know, 9 o'clock on a Monday night trying to reverse image search something, a screenshot you've taken from your TV, you know?
I think that, yeah, that grafting element of it is so important. And another thing you just touched on there, I think is, again, from my experience being on the other side of it from doing a bit of journalism back in the day, but really making the journalist's job as easy as possible and giving them the thing that they need. Don't like, oh, here's a case study and click here to get more information or whatever. Like, if you're making that journalist job more hard than it needs to be, they're probably not interested in working with you. If you can give them that new interesting data or whatever it is as quickly as possible and as easily as possible, they're more likely to work with you again, right? You're making their job that little bit easier. Like you said, they don't have time to go off and reverse Google image search stuff. So you doing that job for them is like, oh yeah, I would never even thought of that. They don't even know the hours you poured into that, but the final result is there. It's like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, spoon feed, right? Like I always say spoon feeding. Like when I was a journalist, you could have sent me the greatest scoop on my beat, in my patch, but if you'd attached it to an email and had to download a zip file. And
oh, God.
In publish rate, right? Like, I need you to get everything in the body of the email. You know, the first couple of... Same with writing, you know, writing a piece of journalism. Those first couple of lines, I've got to tell me, right, what am I going to get from this? What are my readers going to get from this? Why is this relevant? Why is it relevant now? And I need that in the first couple of lines, or I'm probably not going to read the rest of the email, no matter how great your data is or how great the case studies are. You've got to hook me in really quickly, because, I mean, I speak to journalists these days and, you know, they're getting 200-300 emails a day on a good day, you know? Like,
I don't envy those poor journalists.
No, it's not. It's overwhelming to think about. But
I think I get maybe a dozen emails a day, and that's like me being generous. It's probably less than that on average, because I'm not a very like email heavy role here at Candor. But most of the stuff I do is like DMs, setting up podcast guests and all that kind of stuff. I can't imagine 200 emails on a good day. That would just melt my poor little ADHD brain. I'm the kind of person who has to clear every notification I have as soon as possible. Yeah, I'm a diehard inbox zero kind of person. I could not handle that. Whenever I see someone else's phone and it's like, 1,400 unread messages, I'm like,
I'm just gonna check my phone. I think I'm going to upset you here.
Opposite, Joe?
I have got on the dot 15,000 unread emails.
15,000? If I've got 15,000 emails,
To be fair, that's all my email accounts into one app. I still have
about eight across four different email addresses. I have about eight unread, and that's because I'm at work and I haven't checked my inbox.
I still get it. And this will give you a story about targeting. I used to, towards the end of my journalism career, I worked for the Irish Post in London, and I used to get emails from PRs if anything was happening in the kind of Irish diaspora in the UK. And I still get emails from half a dozen Irish centres around the country, because no matter how many times I unsubscribe from their emails or tell them I'm no longer a journalist and I'm a digital PR, I don't know why I'm telling them that. I can't get them to stop sending me these emails. So imagine what people that, you know, I'll not be a journalist for what, a decade? Imagine what people that are actively working in journalism, their inboxes are chaotic. I mean, you get it sometimes where I will email a journalist that I know is still at a publication and the email will bounce back, and my sister will be, the emails bounce back, and, you know, and I might leave it a bit, and then I might email them again and it might go through, or I might reach out another way and say, hey, are you still at, you know, are you still at the Metro? And they'll be like, oh yeah, sorry, I went on holiday and my inbox just collapsed, essentially. It was full. I couldn't, you know, my emails couldn't get through.
I have an exact similar story where the journalist in question was on maternity leave. And
oh God.
The exact same thing. I assume they were gone for, you know, 6, 9 months, a year, whatever it was. And the inbox just collapsed. So I spoke to them just before they left, like, hey, by the way, I'm not going to be around to cover this. You're probably best reaching out to my colleague, but when I'm back, let me know. And I ended up Twitter DMing them and being like, hey, I sent you an email a little while ago. You know, I saw you're back from mat leave and stuff. How's things going? It's like, oh, that email address is just dead now. I can't. It got to like 50,000 or something unread. Like the number of digits was too long for the unread section on Gmail, so it just kind of broke and it exceeded the storage limits. I didn't know that was a thing. Okay. What's the best email to get you on there, please? Like, it was a whole, oh wow, there's the limits of technology kind of slamming you back in the face, being like, yeah, you can't just leave 100,000 unread emails, it turns out.
and that gives you, I mean, that gives you a kind of scale of the issue. And, you know, I think we talked earlier about, is it getting harder? Well, of course it is, because
the sheer numbers of it, right? Yeah.
Right? It's like you're competing for airtime in an inbox with, like, and it doesn't matter if everybody else is irrelevant and yours is relevant. You've still got to cut through that. And, you know, like I said, if you were doing anything around Barbie this week, how many Barbie kind of subject lines are people seeing now? I did some work with a sports client during the World Cup last year, and sending out World Cup is like, what's the point almost? Everyone said, how can you know, unless I get like, I don't know, Lionel Messi to hand deliver this email to a journalist to pay attention at this point, right? Because everyone in PR, digital or otherwise, is sending kind of World Cup emails, and yeah, it is. It's big out there.
Yeah, that sounds like a skill in and of itself, because, you know, we mentioned keeping track of trends and being aware of who covers what and all that kind of thing. But knowing not what to cover is a whole other like skill in and of itself, right? Like you said, if you're focusing on like, oh, this is going to be the big thing, like, yeah, everyone can tell that's the big thing. Barbie and Oppenheimer are like what everyone is talking about right now. So if you really want to do like a, here's an AI generated Barbie dream house, but we're a real estate client or whatever, it's like, yeah, every real estate client in the world has done that. And if you're not, again, if you're not the first, then tough. There's a million of them behind you that have, you know, already covered it. So I guess how do you go about that? Do you try and dodge those really, really, really big trends? Or is there a particular way of kind of picking that out? Or is that just your years of experience and also experience in journalism that you've got that kind of keen eye for it?
It's hard, you know. It's a hard one to call. There are some things that are so saturated that you think, look, you know, unless it's really relevant, unless we can really add to this story, let's just sit it out. Let's go and do something else. You know, if everyone's sending an email about Barbie or the World Cup, let's go and send an email about something else, because there are, you know, it can't always be a one story week for journalism. So, you know, you can just go and do something completely different. You know, if it is really relevant and you've really got something to add, then you have to fight for your space in that conversation. And it's, yeah, it's brutal out there.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. You know, may the best man win kind of thing. But yeah, sometimes if you're a real estate agent trying to, you know, news jack Barbie, and like you said, everyone's done an AI Barbie dream house. I think Airbnb, was it? Did they build the Drami Barbie dream house?
Yeah.
You can't compete with that. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, you know, we talk about that a lot in SEO with like trying to compete in the SERPs with those big names. I think it is one of those ways where if you can be the newest, the freshest, the fastest, whatever it is, there is actual opportunity there in certain circumstances where you can get that coverage ahead of the big name, ahead of the conglomerate, the national company, the international company, get your tiny little client that coverage. And I think it's something, like I said, we battle so much within in SEO, trying to outrank and fight that perpetual top three, top five in your industry or whoever it is. Is there a kind of like way of identifying that, do you think? Is there those little sneaky opportunities? Do you think they're still relevant and worth it? Or do you need to kind of cover a bit of everything across the board?
I think this is where with reactive PR, it allows you to do that without putting all your eggs in one basket. So if you were going to do a big hero campaign around something really oversaturated, I'd be really cautious about doing that, to be honest, unless, like I said, unless you could really add something to the story, unless it was really relevant to your niche and to your brand. But with reactive PR, you can afford to take a few more risks, you know, because you can do a few smaller campaigns a month or a week or, you know, so you can try and hop on something really big. And if it doesn't work, well, okay, that's fine. We've learned from that. And let's go and do something that no one else is talking about this week and that's still relevant or still topical. So I think my answer to that would be, don't put all your eggs in that Barbie Oppenheimer basket, or, you know, that, you know, go and try
half pink, half grey basket that is Barbie and Oppenheimer. Right?
Go and try and diversify a bit and look elsewhere.
Awesome. Well, that is pretty much the state of digital PR in 2023. I think as a nice little round trip about what people can expect.
Thank you.
Where can people follow you, Joe? Where can people keep up with your digital PR exploits and expert tips across social media and all that kind of stuff? Are you going to recommend Threads is the big question. Should we follow your Threads?
Oh, no. Well, it's the etiquette these days. I need to know what everyone else is doing.
You would be the first guest to recommend
would
to follow
I?
Them
in
on
that
Threads,
case,
I think.
I love
so.
Being first. Right, yeah, follow me on Threads. My handle on Threads is my handle everywhere else because, well, it pulled you through from Instagram, didn't it? So it's just Joe Marie O'Reilly, which quite unimaginatively is my name. Tell I used to be a journalist, so that's why my handles are all my name. Same on LinkedIn, same on Twitter. I probably talk more about digital PR on LinkedIn. I just moan about things, trains and things on Twitter, and I don't know what I'm going to do with Threads yet. Time will tell. Follow me and find out, I guess.
There's only one way to find out, right? Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Joe. It's been an absolute pleasure to finally sit down with you, finally have a conversation.
No, it's been great fun. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
And that about wraps us up for this week's episode of Search with Candor. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joe O'Reilly as much as I did. I learned a lot about digital PR and, you know, why it isn't actually as hard as most people think. even between recording this and releasing this, I saw two more polls on LinkedIn talking about this very subject of what do you find hardest in SEO? Is it link building? And link building won by like 70 or 80% again. So it's still a very common thing I'm seeing across social media. And hopefully this episode will be a nice little way to alleviate a lot of issues people are finding and why people are struggling with digital PR so much and why so many companies are struggling with digital PR so much in 2023. Please do share this around if you haven't already. Please do subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode, which comes out every single week at 5 a.m. UK time on Monday, ready for you to start your week with the latest SEO and, in this case, digital PR news and updates every single Monday. I will, of course, be back next week. I will be talking with Elise Bordes, talking all about how to be an international freelance SEO consultant. Is that different to being a local freelance? How does being freelance and also working with clients around the world and in multiple languages, how do you balance all of that? If you're looking for a change in your career path and you're looking to do something like this, Elise is full of really interesting tips, tricks, and advice. And I highly recommend you tuning in next week for that conversation. Until then, thank you so much for listening and have a lovely week.